Hopefully by now you have figured out our Friday musical theme, and if so, we're going to give you an opportunity in a few minutes to call in to see Andre Rieu, who leads the Johann Strauss Orchestra. This is an outstanding international orchestra that is coming to Little Caesars Arena September 13th. So hold your guess, wait for the cue to call, and that will come up in, like I said, about 15, 20 minutes or so. Daniel Penny, U.S. Marine veteran, was charged today with second-degree manslaughter in the subway chokehold death of Jordan Neely, a young man who was known to New Yorkers as a subway busker who impersonated Michael Jackson, but that was many, many troubled years ago. He has since become a homeless, mentally disturbed man, a history of assaultive behavior. He was behaving, they thought, in a threatening manner. That's why they subdued him. And he died in that chokehold. Now, some have said that the U.S. Marines should have known that death was a possibility and that this is nothing short of murder. It begs the question, where is the line between justifiable use of force in defense of your life and excessive force? It should be an important case. Todd Flood is an attorney and managing partner at Flood Law, who has been at both the prosecution and the defense table. Todd, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Guy. Thanks for having me.
Before I get to that, help me with what happened in Oxford today. The civil suits against the superintendent, the principal, some others were dismissed. Why?
Well, because there wasn't one of the prongs necessary, as the court, you know, basically laid out in a very detailed opinion, that there was an act by those individual defendants. However, on the other side of the fence, what is a victory for the plaintiffs in the Oxford case is that the case is going to proceed forward, where there was a duty, in essence, they did some overt act. They advised, if you don't do something, we will. Did that trigger Crumbly to do the act? That was the question that, you know, basically barred the defense of the thought of governmental immunity. So it's a victory in a big way from this standpoint. The victims of the horrific, unbelievable shooting that day will have their day in court, and discovery, Guy, that's the big thing. Depositions will take place. More will be brought out as discovery goes on. And then from there, you know, can you bring the case back against the other defendants when you find out more information? Yeah, I think that's a very distinct possibility.
And we should point out that you need more than just a failure to act. There has to be what they call an affirmative act for these cases to go forward, because there were many failures to act. Failure to check his bag, failure to ask if there was a gun, failure to call the school resource officer, and those things at least may be addressed with these other two defendants. Getting back to this case of Daniel Penny and Jordan Neely in New York, in that New York suburb, under New York law, who has the burden of proof here? Does he have some protections here, or is the presumption against him?
So, no. You know, this is going to be a self-defense case, and when you have a self-defense case, there's that extra element. So the government always has the burden to prove each and every element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. When self-defense is raised in a competent way, then there's that extra burden. And you can't sit back and do the Monday morning quarterbacking as we sit wherever we're sitting, say, I would have done this or I would have done that. You have kind of a two-pronged test there for self-defense. You have both that of what it appeared to the defendant at that time, not as it appeared to you. So how did it appear to him? And there's a lot that goes into that, and that hurdle for which the prosecution has to overcome. This is a case that obviously race is going to be a very big part of, but you know, when you look at the two sides of this case, the mayor comes out a week after and says, you know, that he was using the subway station as a homeless shelter and the mental illness issues. Well, sure enough, you know, as it appeared to the defendant at the time, he was acting as though, if you want to play all the facts out, in his own self-defense or defense of others. And then there's no crime if that's the case.
Right.
On the government side of the fence, a chokehold takes so long, right? It's not as though, you know, you were in fear for your life and you shot the man.
Right.
There's this delayed time.
There's an opportunity to reflect and to consider whether or not he still's a threat.
Right, right. And I've had cases like this. I've had a Marine where he was charged with first-degree murder. He was in Afghanistan. He faced lost half of his platoon in a road bombing. He comes back to the United States, living in Waterford, and is attacked, and he shoots the man, which he believed at the time. Now take it as he saw it,
right?
With all the PTSD, with all the stuff of being a decorated Marine, and the prosecution couldn't overcome that burden of showing that my client acted in self-defense. Here, it's going to be very similar. The only issue that I see as a big hurdle, and you hit the nail on the head, is the length of time of that chokehold,
which could be as long as 15 minutes. And they will likely say that he had the training to know that death was a possible outcome and should have worked to avoid that. But there were others on that subway car that were directly participating. Do you think, how powerful would their testimony be for Daniel Penny's defense that they can say, hey, this was our perception too? He was a threat.
Very, very potent defense. And mind you, I bet there's going to be film footage of this, you know, from other angles and vantage points. But when you have witnesses that say they were afraid for their lives or of bodily injury, serious bodily injury by this man, you know, that is a potent eyewitness testimony of what, you know, the defendant was doing here and why he was doing it, why Daniel Penny put himself to defend himself and others. So this is going to be a very watched trial. This is going to go to trial. He's facing up to 15 years. His guidelines, I checked real quick, and it looks like his guideline sentence would be a minimum of 3.5 years, up
right.
to 15 years in prison. So this is a man, I'm sure, his defense team, they're putting all the defenses in place as it relates to self-defense, and I think you're going to see a dogfight here. And unfortunately,
well, let me ask you about that, though.
So,
since you had experience, you know, defending a U.S. Marine, how sympathetic might the jury be to the fact that this is a Marine and that he is an elite fighting person who has served this country?
It goes both ways. You're not supposed to have that bias. You're not supposed to have that prejudice of, you know, someone that has saved lives or fought for our country or has fought for our flag. You're not supposed to have that bias. You're supposed to use the facts that are placed in front of you. But it's so difficult, right? Because the opposite side of that is his training, the recklessness. He knows how to basically cut the oxygen off from the brain with the chokehold, which then in turn causes asphyxia, which then in turn causes death. So it can go both ways. But I see in my case, in my particular case of my client was charged with first degree murder. And there were people on the jury, ultimately, after we interviewed him, you know, did have bias and sympathy, although they said they placed it aside for, you know, people that have fought for our flag, fought for their constitution. So, albeit, we have to deal with facts. And the biggest fact I see here that is going to be a hurdle for the prosecution is that the how it appeared to him at the time, not to you and I as we sit here today.
Yeah. And others on that car. Very quickly, because I got to let you go, but we know from reporting that there were 41 arrests of Jordan Neely over a 9-year period, 4 of them assaulted. He was under a warrant for his arrest for the most recent assault. Will those facts be entered into, for
evidence? So
yeah, and question, into evidence?
So the question becomes, if it was known to the defendant. So if I knew, Guy, you had a propensity to fight or you had a propensity to do those bad things, yes, it definitely comes in. It's relevant because it goes to your state of mind or my state of mind.
Okay, but only if he had knowledge.
If it's not known, then it's a fact that realistically won't come in because it's not relevant to Penny's state of mind. What is going to be most relevant is what he saw, what he perceived,
right,
and the fear for what she was under.
Understood.
Or others were under.
Okay. Todd, thanks so much. It's going to be an interesting case, and you've illuminated us. We appreciate it.
Guy, always a pleasure being
okay.
with you. Thanks so much.
Take care. Have a good weekend. They should put the city of New York on trial here because they had him in a psychiatric hospital. They released him with no follow-up care. They had him on all these different arrests, but never incarcerated him or got him the treatment they needed. They should turn around and put the city of New York on trial. We'll be back.